And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It's about 10 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm Carl Amari. Lisa Wolf to my right, looking illuminating.
Oh, thank you, Carl.
Is that a good word for you?
For today.
Illuminating. And this is November 15th, 2015. Program 32. They have allowed us to be on the air 32 weeks so far, Lisa.
So far, so good.
We're still here. You know, all that begging has been paying off.
Yep.
And who's
begging who?
And we are going to do something quite different on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. For the last 32 weeks, we've been playing classic radio shows from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. But tonight and into Monday morning here, because we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 hours, we are going to play some new time radio dramas. New time radio dramas. You know what that means, Lisa?
I sure do.
Okay. All right. It means shows that are done currently, but the style of the classic radio shows. And I've been producing new time radio shows for quite a few years. One of them is the Twilight Zone radio dramas, which is a radio series based on Rod Serling's TV series. Another is called Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories. And we have two full episodes. They run about 40 minutes each. We're going to break them up into three parts. And we have the writer of both of those shows with us live in the studio, Barry Rickert. And we'll be talking to Barry in just a minute. But first, let's start things off with our sponsors segment.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Directed by Robert Zemeckis, this untitled World War II romance stars this actor along with Marion Cotillard playing assassins who fall for each other.
All right. Now, this actor that Lisa is talking about appeared in a 1999 drama called The Fight Club. Take a listen.
It's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything.
All right, if you know who that celebrity is for our Celebrity Scoop segment, call us right now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You'll win a $25 gift card to Warehouse Bar and Pizza for a terrific pizza. Call now. We'll be back. Find our winner in a flash.
You are listening to the WGN Radio Theater. We want to name that celebrity. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
It's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything.
And we have Chris on the line from Joliet. Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Great, great, Chris. Who is that?
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt is right. He's going to be in a new movie with Marion Cotillard, and you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria. It's terrific. I tasted the food at a party, and they've got 15 large-screen TVs and specialty pizzas and appetizers and sandwiches and salads and this huge long bar with a great bar selection. So, Chris, I hope that you love that. You can check out the menu online at thewarehousechicago.com. Congratulations, Chris.
All right, sounds delicious. Thank you.
Great.
Brad Pitt. Yeah, you know, he gets all the acclaim, and he has a really talented brother, too, Arm.
He's
actually almost as good of an actor as Brad.
Almost, but yeah. Brad takes the cake.
No, absolutely right. So I want to welcome to the show Barry Rickert. Hey, Barry, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Thanks very much for having me here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for coming out. And Barry has been writing for many, many, many years, even though he's only 21 years of age.
Thank you. And, it's a good thing we're on the radio.
And writing for radio, Barry, is a little different than writing, let's say, for TV or something else, right? Because of the theater of the mind, right?
Absolutely. You almost, in a way, have to kind of find creative ways to over-explain things that you'd normally see visually.
Right. Now, this we're going to talk to you all throughout the show, but we want to get into this first episode. The Twilight Zone Radio Dramas is a show that I started producing back in 2001, licensed the rights from the Rod Serling Estate and CBS, and took all of the original scripts that Rod Serling and all these other great writers wrote, took those, and then gave them to great writers like yourself, and you had to completely rewrite them, right? Because they don't work. A television script doesn't work on radio. But we also created brand new stories that were never seen on television, and the one we're going to play is one of those. And you created this from scratch. It's called There Goes the Neighborhood. Set this up a little bit without giving out the full story
without
to our listeners.
Spoilers. Basically, this started out in my brain as kind of a monster in the basement story, and as often happens as you're writing, themes kind of emerge, and it turned into kind of a typical morality tale you'd hear on the Twilight Zone about not judging a book by its cover and the evils of greed and that kind of thing. It stars Tim Kazurinsky brilliantly as kind of a nebbishy guy and has a terrific cast that really brought this thing to life.
Yeah, I mean, Meg Falcon plays his wife in this, and Tim, of course, one of Chicago's very own here, one of the best, and he's terrific in this. All right, let's listen to part one. These are going to be cut up into three parts because they're about 40-plus minutes. Barry Rickard wrote this. There Goes the Neighborhood. Here's part one of the Twilight Zone radio dramas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Helen!
Come here, please!
I'll be right there!
Well, come on, hurry up!
Yes, dear.
Come in the house. I've got a bone to pick with you.
What's wrong, Helen?
Look at what I did to my hand.
Ooh, what happened?
I was cleaning the basement, and I cut it on that stupid metal contraption you brought home yesterday.
Oh, no. The accelerator bracket. Are you all right? Do you need me to clean it with hydrogen peroxide? Or should we go to the ER?
No. I finally got the bleeding to stop by myself. I thought I was going to hemorrhage to death.
Thank goodness.
What?
I mean, it's good you were able to stop the bleeding.
What is that stupid bracket doing down there anyway?
Well, I needed to complete my experiments.
Your experiments? That's all I ever hear about. I can't believe I gave up a successful modeling career to marry such a geek. Oh, this ridiculous hobby of yours is getting out of hand, Edgar.
Well, it's more than a hobby, dear.
Yes, you're right. It's an obsession. You're constantly down there tinkering with that pile of junk you built. How about spending some time fixing the problems we have in the house? How about repairing that leaky roof, Edgar, or the garbage disposal that keeps breaking down?
Well, I'll get to all of that, Helen. I promise. It's just that I'm so close to a breakthrough. If I can just figure out how to break down the molecules into subatomic particles...
The only breakdown around here is going to be mine unless you get rid of that oversized erector set. Do they know you're bringing all that equipment home from work?
No, but they don't really need to. You see, it's all equipment they've discarded. They don't use it anymore.
In other words, you're going garbage picking behind the lab and then dumping it in our basement. Why don't you just do these experiments at work?
Oh, because the facility isn't doing any more research with...
With what, Edgar?
Well, it's not important for you to know, Helen. I don't want to waste your time talking shop.
You're one to talk about wasting time. Maybe if you'd put this much thought into your job, you'd be able to get a promotion.
Well, the only kind of promotion available to someone my level would be a project manager.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I'm not the managerial type, Helen. I'd be dealing with budgets, you know, giving evaluations to personnel, writing reports for upper management.
Yes, and that's why managers make the big money.
But I'm an engineer. I'm good at working with equipment, not people. I like calculating formulas, not salaries. I'd be terrible in a managerial position, Helen. I'd be wasting my time.
You don't seem to mind wasting your time outside while my life's fluid is gushing out of me. Where were you anyway?
Across the street, meeting the new neighbors.
They finally moved in? What's their name?
Let me see if I remember how to pronounce it. Bhagavatula. Yeah, that's it. Bhagavatula.
Oh, great. What is that, Korean?
No, Helen. They're from India.
India? Doesn't that real estate agent know how to sell to people like us?
They're quite nice, really. He's a vice president at one of the banks downtown, and she's a professor at the university. Such a lovely woman, a real exotic beauty. Not as lovely as you, of course. Oh, and they have a 13-year-old boy. He'll be at the junior high in the fall.
Of course he will, because their kind always follows the same pattern. They move into our neighborhoods, take our jobs, and infiltrate our schools.
Now, Helen, I hope you're not going to be hostile towards our new neighbors like you are towards that lovely Sanchez family two doors down. You can actually learn a lot from them. Mr. Bhagavatula was telling me about some of the fascinating customs in their country. Can you imagine coming from such a rich cultural heritage?
The only thing I can imagine is the stench of curry casserole that's going to be wafting across the street. I'll tell you something, Edgar. I am sick of the way this neighborhood is changing. And I'm even sicker of not being able to do anything about it because your salary isn't high enough for us to move someplace nice. Someplace with people like us. We're trapped. We've got Gandhi and his family moving in across the street. Pancho Villa and his gang living two doors down. And God knows who else ready to move in at any minute. And you're oblivious to all of it, Edgar. You're like an ostrich with its head in the sand, tinkering away in the basement while this neighborhood is going downhill. Well, I'm sick of it, and I can't take any more. Things better change soon, Edgar. Do you hear me? Things better change soon.
Yes, Helen.
Portrait of a tragically mismatched couple, Edgar and Helen Peabody, a textbook example of opposites attracting. He was attracted to her breathtaking beauty, while she was attracted to the fortune that would result from marrying a brilliant up-and-coming young scientist. Alas, her beauty turned out to be only skin deep, while neither his fame nor fortune ever materialized. Now they languish in a loveless marriage, sustained by the fear that they've come too far to turn back. But a third party will soon come into the middle of this unlikely union, a guest who will cause the simmering undercurrent of discontent in this household to reach the boiling point. An unexpected visitor from a different neighborhood, one that's somewhere in the vicinity of the Twilight Zone.
And now, the Twilight Zone and our story, There Goes the Neighborhood, starring Tim Kazurinsky with Stacy Keach as your narrator.
I'm dying to tell someone about this, but I can't believe I almost spilled the beans to Helen this afternoon. Ooh, I gotta be more careful. First thing she'd do is call her cousin Rick. That'd be a problem. He's a pretty sharp guy. I suppose that's a prerequisite for being an FBI agent. But if he found out about this, I'd have G-men swarming all over the front lawn. No, nobody should know. Not yet. First, I want to perfect the process. And after that, I'm going to make certain this technology isn't dangerous to humans. Then, and only then, can the whole world know Edgar J. Peabody has built the world's first teleportation device. Just think, daily commuters could avoid highway traffic by teleporting straight to their offices. And accident victims could be teleported from the accident site directly to the ER. The possibilities are endless. Ugh. There. Now, I need to run a couple of tests. I'll just turn on the particle accelerator, let it warm up. There we go. Reminds me of that old super heterodyne radio receiver Dad had when I was a kid. Always had to let that baby warm up. Now.
Edgar!
Yes, Helen?
Come up here. The garbage disposal broke down again.
I'm in the middle of something, dearest.
I don't care. This is important. Get up here now.
All right. Coming.
Well, it's about time. I've never seen such a slowpoke.
What's wrong with the garbage disposal?
Same as always. Made a funny grinding noise, then stopped.
Did you throw any silverware down there?
Of course not. What do you think I am, an idiot?
Well, no, dear. I'm just trying to isolate the problem.
Well, you're the one who wants to be an engineer for the rest of his life, so stop isolating and start engineering a way to repair this thing. I'm going to go down and throw some clothes in the washer. You let me know when the disposal's fixed.
All right. Now let's see what the problem is here. I don't see anything wrong under the sink. No leaking, anyway. I better get a flashlight and look down the drain. Now, where'd I put that thing? Used to have a flashlight in here. What on earth?
Oh, Edgar! Downstairs! Huge! Kill it!
What is it? Another spider?
No! Bigger! Hairy! Kill it!
Oh, if it's hairy, probably is a spider. Oh, where did you see it?
Stairs! By the stairs!
I'll roll up this newspaper and use it to vanquish the beast for my beauty.
Hurry!
Good Lord!
Oh, did you see it?
I saw it!
How big would you say it is?
3 feet high, maybe? About 4 feet long?
Oh, what do you think?
I think I need a bigger newspaper.
No, you dolt! What do you think it is?
I don't know.
Where did it come from?
I don't know.
Oh, it moves so fast.
I know. It looks like it has about 30 legs. Little ones that let it glide along like a millipede. A really big millipede.
Oh, you have to kill it.
Maybe we should call animal control.
That's not an animal. It's a monster.
Well, all the more reason to call in a professional.
Oh, Edgar, be a man for once. Go down and kill it.
With what?
I don't know. You're the man of the house. Find a weapon. Gather up the thimbleful of testosterone you've got and go kill that thing in our basement.
All right. I'll take this broom.
Whatever. Just get down there.
Here goes.
I'm going to close this door behind you.
Why?
So it doesn't try and get up here.
Actually, that's a good idea. We don't want it running around the living room. It might try and get out the front door.
Yeah, plus, I just shampooed the rug.
All right, let's take a break here on the Twilight Zone radio dramas. That's an episode called There Goes the Neighborhood, starring Tim Kazurinsky, hosted by Stacy Keach and written by Barry Rickard. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back to the show. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amare. We're here every Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. Monday morning. So please mark your calendar for that. You don't want to miss Lisa Wolf and her golden tones. Right, Lisa?
I wouldn't miss that, no.
The best in the business, Dan Long, our producer, is in there making sure all the correct buttons are pushed so that we can be on the air. Thank you, Dan Long. And we have our guest in the studio, Barry Rickert. Barry, we're in the midst of listening to one of your stories that you wrote from scratch, There Goes the Neighborhood, with Tim Kazurinsky. And what was it like for you coming in, because I know you were there when we recorded this. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun for you to hear it come alive?
A lot of fun, yeah. These three people who were in the cast were just superb. And, you know, to hear people do something that sounded the same in your head or better in a lot of cases is really quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I got to imagine that's a lot of fun. You write something, you're hearing these voices in your head as you're writing them, and then, boom, they come alive. And then with the sound effects and the music, the full production, as we're listening to here on WGN. Now, normally at this time, and I know you listen to the show, I know you like listening to classic radio.
Yeah.
You listen to our show here on WGN. We always play classic radio shows, and I thought it would be fun to examine new time radio programming. And we'll do this into the future, not just the ones I've been doing over the years, because I'm a super fan of a radio drama, old and new. But there's a lot of great stuff being produced even today, and we'll play some of it here on the WGN Radio Theater every once in a while, and we're doing it tonight. We hope you enjoy it. We're going to get back to this now. So we recorded this in 2009, and Tim Kazurinsky came in along with these two great actors, Meg Falcon. And you will hear Roger Mueller as the creature here in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And Stacy Keach, the great Stacy Keach, is our host and narrator of the Twilight Zone radio dramas. Let's tune this in. Part two. There will be three parts of this. So part two now of There Goes the Neighborhood on the Twilight Zone radio dramas.
Oh, great. Where the door closed, I can't see a thing down here. I hear it. I think I went over by the furnace. Probably likes the warmth. So dark. I'm gonna have to turn on the light. As soon as I find it. There. Now, where...
Please, do not hurt me.
What? Who's talking? I don't see you.
I mean you no harm.
I hear you, but your voice, it's inside my head. Whoa, you communicate telepathically, don't you?
Yes, please, do not hurt me with your weapon.
Weapon? Oh, this is just a broom.
A broom? What kind of weapon is that?
It's not a weapon. It's for sweeping up, you know, cleaning.
Oh, so... You're going to clean me? Is this a way of conquering one's opponent here?
No. I was going to hit you with it.
Ow, please. Do not. I apologize if I frighten you or your companion.
Companion? Oh, you mean Helen. I guess that's one word to describe her. Where are you anyway?
Behind this heating source.
I was right. You like the warmth over there in that corner by the furnace, don't you?
Yeah, traveling through the space-time continuum appears to have affected my body's metabolism. I am very cold.
The space-time continuum? Where are you from?
It is hard to explain. Suffice it to say, it is a different time and place.
Are you saying you're from a different dimension?
I would consider that an accurate assessment.
Well, how did you get here?
I arrived through your receiving portal.
My receiving portal? The teleporter. I left it on when I went upstairs. It must have acted like an open door for anything passing through the space-time continuum. Whoa! It worked! Beyond my wildest dreams, it worked! I knew those adjustments I made would do the trick, although I didn't think it would teleport beings from other dimensions. Oh, criminy! I guess I should turn it off, huh, before this place looks like some kind of interdimensional Grand Central Station. I guess I can consider my latest modifications a triumph. I have successfully teleported a being from another dimension to a basement in Hackensack, New Jersey.
You have been experimenting with teleportation?
Yes.
I have as well.
So, teleportation isn't a standard mode of transportation where you come from?
No. conducting trials in secret.
Oh, I know the feeling. I was an engineer on a teleportation project at my company a few months ago. Out of the blue, the government ordered us to cease and desist, but they never explained why. I've heard it's because they're experimenting with the technology themselves for a secret military weapons project, but I think it could be used to improve our way of life. That's why I've been continuing my experiments by myself down here.
Where I come from, it is feared that teleportation would make escape too easy.
Escape from what?
From a race that recently overthrew our government. They call themselves the Masters. They now hunt down and exterminate members of any race unlike their own.
Well, that's awful. So I take it that where you come from, everyone doesn't look like you?
No. The Masters do not look like my race at all. They are quite ugly.
Well, sounds like it's a good thing you escaped.
I am not convinced that I am in a better situation here.
What do you mean?
My appearance seems to have alarmed you and your companion. You were coming down here to kill me.
Well, you have to understand, you look different from anything we've ever seen before.
Oh, I am considered ugly here.
Well, that's hard to say. I haven't actually had a chance to get a good look at you. Why don't you come out from behind the furnace, the heating source?
Okay.
Oh, my. You definitely don't look like any species we have here, but ugly? Trust me, I've encountered far uglier beings on this planet.
Edgar?
Hey, whoa, where are you going? You don't have to hide back there again.
I fear your companion does not share your indifference about my appearance.
Oh, don't let that bother you. Helen doesn't share anybody's opinion about anything.
Edgar, did you take care of it?
Would you excuse me one moment? I need to talk with my companion.
Any killing going on?
Helen, dear, I decided not to kill it.
Why not?
Well, I'd like to learn more about it.
Well, fine. Kill it and slice it open. Then you can look around in its guts and learn all you want.
Well, I'm not talking about its anatomy. I want to keep it alive, observe its behavior. I don't know, ask it some questions.
Ask it questions?
Helen, sit down for a moment.
Edgar, what's going on?
Just listen to me. I'm not sure how to tell you this, so I'm just going to come right out and say it. That creature in the basement, it's from another dimension. It arrived here through the space-time continuum from a place where it has suffered unbearable persecution. Well, I would like to learn more about it, find out where it came from, whether it's from some alternate universe on Earth or perhaps some other planet in a distant galaxy, and maybe even find out if I can help it.
Edgar, you have officially gone over the edge. I mean, I've always considered you eccentric, quirky even, but I never realized there is a hole in your marble bag.
Helen, I'm telling the truth.
Okay, let's assume for the sake of argument that you are. How did that thing get here?
Well, you have to promise not to tell anybody this, but that contraption, as you like to call it, the one I've been building in the basement, it's a teleportation device. The creature was passing through the space-time continuum and employed it as a destination portal.
Give it to me in English, Edgar, not your usual geek speak.
Think of it like someone getting off a train at a specific station, except in this case, the train travels through different dimensions.
Great. So we're harboring the commuter from another world. Where's the phone?
Who are you calling?
I'm calling someone to come and kill that creature.
No, Helen.
Yes! It's not enough that the neighborhood's been invaded by foreigners from other countries. You have to put out the welcome sign for a giant insect from a different dimension. I've reached the end of my rope, Edgar. It's time to put an end to all this. Hello, FBI. I'd like to talk to Agent Rick Fielding.
Helen, please,
Put that phone down.
No, Edgar. There's an illegal alien in our basement, and you're clearly not man enough to take care of it. So I'm calling someone who is. My cousin Rick. Hello? Yes, I'm waiting to talk to FBI agent Rick Fielding. Oh, he's not in. Can I leave a message? You see, there's an intruder in our house.
Helen, I beg you.
What's that? I wouldn't describe it as a person. No, it's not an animal. It's something much worse.
Helen, please.
Right now it's in our basement.
I'm telling you, for the last time...
I went down there to do some laundry.
All right, I was going to tell you my plan.
I threw a load in the washer and turned around, and standing there looking up at me was...
I thought of a way we could make a lot of money off that creature.
Could you hold on for a second?
But I guess you're not interested in being filthy rich. So, go ahead and finish telling the FBI your story.
I'll call you back. All right, Mr. Trump, let's hear your big money-making scheme.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking. I learn as much as possible about this creature, who it is, where it's from, what message it brings from the cosmos for the people of Earth, and that kind of thing. Then, since it only communicates telepathically, I become its spokesman.
Telepathically? What does that mean?
Well, never mind that part. I'll explain later. Anyway, we then travel around together, doing presentations at respected technical institutes, you know, lecturing at universities, meeting with world ambassadors, and then we really go for the big time. We appear on Oprah.
You're telling me that we're going to get rich because you're going to play Colonel Parker to some illegal alien from another dimension?
Think of the possibilities, Helen. Book deals, a movie franchise, and television. Oh, think of the television we could do, Helen. Tell me the whole country wouldn't tune in to see that creature on Dancing with the Stars.
Edgar, for once in your pathetic life, you may actually have a good idea. You think we could make a lot of money off that thing?
Millions, Helen. Millions.
All right, I'll agree to this little plan of yours, but it better work. I have just one demand. While it's in this house, that beast stays in the basement. I don't ever want to see it up here running around in my clean house with its filthy little insect feet. Do you understand me, Edgar?
Of course, it stays in the basement. You won't regret this, Helen. Now, I'd better go back down and learn all I can about it. So then, I finished up by telling her we could make millions.
And this convinced her to let me stay alive.
Are you kidding? If money's involved, Helen's all over it. You are being protected by a great big dollar sign, my friend.
I do not understand all your words, but I comprehend that your plan has saved my life. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, how about if I call you Al?
Oh, is there a meaning to this Al?
Let's just say it's short for alien.
Oh, I find this appropriate. And what should I call you?
My name is Edgar.
Edgar. To what species do you belong, Edgar?
I am a human.
I have heard you refer to your companion as... Helen.
Yes, that is her name.
And what does Helen mean?
It means the most beautiful woman in the world.
Oh, is Helen considered the most beautiful woman in your world?
Helen is considered quite breathtakingly beautiful. She's what's known as a real head-turner. She once held the record for winning the most beauty contests on the East Coast. Unfortunately, Helen has what we would call an ugly personality.
Then, from my point of view, she is not beautiful at all.
I'm afraid there are many of my species who would agree with you.
I attempted to communicate telepathically with her when I first arrived, but I could not.
Aw, she was in too much shock.
No, her mind is closed. I cannot get through to it.
Are you able to understand her?
Oh, yes. Every word.
My condolences.
For forgive me for saying so, Edgar, but I sense that you fear her.
Well, I never told anyone this before, but I have some trouble standing up to her. She has a very strong personality.
So do you, Edgar. It took a great deal of strength for you to come down here and confront a species you had never encountered before.
I suppose it did.
I would encourage you to confront her in the same way.
You mean try and hit her with a broom?
Oh, if necessary.
Listen, Al, I've been thinking. Maybe we could share our knowledge of teleportation with each other. You know, sort of combine our brain power and see if we can perfect the process.
That is an excellent idea, Edgar.
Would you mind taking a look at my teleporter? Maybe you can suggest some improvements.
Oh, I have already been examining it. You have come up with quite an impressive design. For a human.
Well, thanks, Al.
That is the second portion of There Goes the Neighborhood on the Twilight Zone radio dramas. Barry, great job on the writing. I just love it.
Thank you. Love hearing it again.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. Lisa Wolf is not in this show, but she is in the next episode that
she
we're going to play.
She is indeed.
Very
She's
exciting.
In Fangoria's Dread Time Stories. All right, we'll get back to the conclusion of this Twilight Zone radio dramas in just a few minutes, but first, let's pay some bills. All right, there's our familiar theme song. This is the WGN Radio Theater. It is 12:07 on Monday morning. I'm Carl Amari, your host, and Lisa Wolf is here next to me. And also, Barry Rickert is in the studio along with our producer, Dan Long. And Barry, we are listening to one of your creations, There Goes the Neighborhood. You wrote the script, and Tim Kazurinsky is starring in it. Stacy Keach is the host of the Twilight Zone radio dramas. And you've been writing all kinds of stuff. You write for TV. You write radio commercials. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into this crazy business.
Well, I graduated with a degree in communications and English, which lends itself really well to script writing. And over the years, somewhat at the pestering of my wife, who said, I think that writing stuff is what you need to do because it's going to keep the money coming in. big background in journalism, and that kind of led to writing marketing materials. And over time, I found that I kind of had an affinity for technical writing, which involves service manuals and that kind of thing. Worked in the telecommunications industry for years. And then at some point started writing scripts, did a lot of stuff for the Moody Radio Network.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And ended up writing stuff for you as a result of that. And it's kind of snowballed since then. But
Continue
to do the technical writing for a gaming company now. And
What's the name of the company?
It's called Scientific Games, and they make slot machines, and it's a really fun product to write about, fun industry to work in. And
very cool. I kind of forget, but how many Twilight Zones did you write for me now? It's been a while.
I want to say four.
I was going to say four or five, right?
Yeah, and then, I did a couple of adaptations and a couple of originals.
And then you wrote some of the Fangoria Dread Time stories. We're going to get into that in just a little bit, too. All right, we'll get back to Barry, and we'll get back to the Twilight Zone. But first, our sponsor segment.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
In the upcoming biographical film The Revenant, this actor stars as Hugh Glass, an 1820s frontiersman who was left for dead by his fellow travelers after a vicious bear attack.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the trailer for this. It looks pretty darn good.
It certainly does.
All right, so the actor that she's talking about appeared in a 1998 drama romance. I'm not going to say the title because it'll be too much of a giveaway, but here he is in that film.
I've got $10 in my pocket. I have nothing to offer you, and I know how the world works.
All right, so if you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You'll win a $25 gift card to Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria. You'll get a great pizza for that. Call us right now. We'll find our winner after this short break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we want to name that celebrity. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I've got 10 bucks in my pocket. I have nothing to offer you, and I know how the world works.
And we have Jim on the line from Glendale Heights. Hi, Jim.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Can you name that celebrity for us?
Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic.
That's exactly right, and he's going to be in an upcoming film called The Revenant, which also sounds terrific, so we'll have to check that out. Either way, you are a winner, Jim. You have won a $25 gift card for the Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria. It just recently opened in Chicago's Lincoln Park neighborhood, and they've got some terrific specialty pizzas and appetizers and sandwiches and salads and an impressive bar selection. I hope that you'll appreciate that. I know I will.
Oh, yes, definitely. Thank you.
Oh, good, good, good.
Thank you very much.
Good, check
them. I enjoy your programs.
Oh, thank you.
I enjoy WGN all the time.
Oh, we love WGN, and we particularly love the WGN Radio Theater as well.
Appreciate that.
Take care.
I listen every day, every night.
Awesome.
Oh, thank you. We hope you'll keep listening.
Appreciate it, and congratulations for winning. Hey, real quickly, so our sponsor, Cat's Pride, is giving away a year's supply of kitty litter every single month. How do you enter, folks? Just send us a picture of you and your cat with your name and your cat's name and your city and state. Email it to us at catspridephoto@gmail.com. Do it now. Do it right now. Or you can do it this week, because at the end of the month, each month, the CEO of Cat's Pride comes in here, Dan Jaffe, and we draw one of the pictures that is sent in, and that person wins a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. So make sure you send that in. Send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com, right?
Yep, get it in before the end of the month. So
we'll
be in our drawing.
There's my kitty just running around here. I just let it loose in the studio.
You will never have a pet, Carl.
Oh, yes, I do.
No.
I have a sidekick.
That's for sure.
All right, let's get back to the conclusion now of There Goes the Neighborhood, written by Barry Rickard and starring Tim Kazurinsky, hosted by Stacey Keach on the Twilight Zone Radio Dramas.
I've modified the subroutine that specifies where the person, or whatever, being teleported, will arrive. So, Al, do you ever, miss where you come from?
Yes. I do not miss the persecution, of course, but I do miss my home. Mostly, though, I feel...
What, Al?
I feel guilty about being here.
Guilty? Why?
You see, I have left my kind in a place where they endure abuse on a regular basis. It is not right that they suffer, and I do not. Perhaps I have made a mistake escaping from there.
Well, you simply displayed a survival instinct, Al. Now, that's something all living creatures do, no matter where they come from.
I understand what you are saying, but I cannot help feeling that I have abandoned my species. I have been thinking that perhaps I should go back.
Really?
Yes. I would only have two regrets about leaving. One is that I would miss you, Edgar.
Oh, thanks, Al. I miss you, too. What's your other regret?
That I did not get to see more of where you live.
Okay, Al, you and I are going on a little field trip to the main floor. You can get a look at my world through the living room window.
No, but I thought Helen did not want me on the main floor.
Now, Helen's out getting her hair done. She'll never know. Come on, let's go upstairs. Wait a second. Maybe you should wipe your feet first. All of them. Well, here's the main floor. Come on into the living room. It ain't the Ritz, but it'll give you a decent view of the front yard.
I am not familiar with this Ritz you speak of, but your upstairs is very pleasant.
Okay, I'm gonna open the curtains. You ready?
Yes.
Here goes. I give you Hackensack, New Jersey, in all its glory.
Oh, my. It is so bright. And there are so many colors. What is that substance that covers everything? Is it plant life?
Yes, we call that grass.
And what is that tall, thick plant in the middle of the grass?
That's called a tree.
Edgar, what is that creature?
What creature? Oh, the neighbor's cocker spaniel. That's called a dog.
It does not look like you.
Oh, thank you, Al.
I mean, it is obviously a non-human species. Is that what I have heard you refer to as an animal?
Yes.
Your world, Edgar, it is beautiful.
This is nothing. You're catching us at the end of winter. You should see it in the spring when all the flowers are blooming. You know, if you stayed here till then, I could show you colors that would dazzle your eyeballs or whatever it is you see with.
Oh, what about Helen?
Well, Helen isn't always home. I might even be able to smuggle you out of the house in some kind of disguise so you could see beyond Hackensack. Why, I could even show you Newark.
Oh, sounds very exotic.
Well, besides, at some point, Helen's going to expect us to go on our big press tour.
What if she finds out you lied to her about that?
Well, I wouldn't say I lied to Helen, just that we had a change of plans. The press tour is sort of postponed permanently, and Helen need be none the wiser.
None the wiser,
Helen, what are you doing home?
Lorraine had a cancellation, so she did my hair early, but never mind that. What's that monster doing up here? I told you I wanted it to stay in the basement.
I wanted to familiarize him with the surroundings. He needs to be accustomed to them when we begin our lecture tour.
Save it. I heard your little speech about postponing the lecture tour permanently. You have no intention of making any money off that overgrown bug, and you never did. That's it, Edgar. I'm calling Cousin Rick right now.
No, you're not. Give me that phone.
Oh!
Nobody is going to find out about Al. You hear me? Nobody.
Al? Isn't that adorable? You've named your little pet.
Edgar, I have caused you enough trouble. Tell Helen. I have decided to go back.
No, it's okay.
What's okay?
I have decided I need to go home.
You don't have to do that.
Do what?
But I want to. It is where I belong.
Are you sure?
Who are you talking to?
Al. I mean, the creature. He communicates telepathically, but only with me. I can hear him, but you can't.
Oh, how precious. Since you seem to have such intimate contact with alien creatures, why don't you blow in a call to the mothership and tell them to pick up E.T. here?
Edgar, I do not wish to cause any more strife between you and your companion.
Trust me, it was there long before you arrived.
But I have given this a great deal of thought. While I do not wish to endure further persecution, I believe it would be more honorable to suffer with my species than to run away.
Are you sure about this, Al?
Positive.
Well, if you're convinced it's what you want.
I am. I will go down and prepare to be teleported.
Edgar, will you tell me what on earth is going on?
Yes, Helen, I'll tell you. Al has decided to return to his world.
Yeah? What's the catch?
No catch. He's decided that helping his species is far more important than his own survival. You know what that means?
What?
It means that in spite of the fact that he comes from a place you've never heard of, grew up in a culture you are completely unfamiliar with, and communicates in a way you could never hope to comprehend, he is a far nobler creature than you will ever be. All right, that's the last of the calculations.
I can't believe I let you fill our basement with all this junk.
Helen, what are you doing down here?
I want to be here to watch you throw the switch.
That's not necessary.
Apparently it is. I couldn't trust you to do something as simple as keep that overgrown insect in the basement, so I certainly don't trust you to send it back to Planet Cockroach.
No, fine, fine. Just stand right here so you're out of the way. There. Al, are you ready?
Yes.
All right, you stand over here. Good. That's perfect.
Edgar?
Yes?
You have been a good friend to me. Thank you.
Al, it has been a genuine privilege to know you.
Come on, enough with the teary goodbyes. Just get it over with.
All right, I'll run the activation sequence. Here goes.
So long, Quasimodo.
It worked.
Edgar, if it worked, why am I still here?
Al, my multi-legged friend, I had a change of heart.
I do not understand. What is this change of heart?
In this particular context, it means I decided not to send you back. I took your advice and stood up to Helen. I sent her there instead of you.
Why?
Well, I started thinking about where you're from. How there's a race there called the Masters. The fact that they've declared themselves superior to all other races. The way they exterminate anyone who's different from them. And I came to the conclusion that Helen would be right at home there.
I cannot argue with your logic.
Come on, let's recalibrate the teleporter. We need to figure out how to transport an entire species of many-legged creatures to a more compassionate neighborhood.
A quote here from St. Augustine. Beauty is indeed a good gift of God, but that the good may not think it a great good, God dispenses it even to the wicked. Case in point, one Helen Peabody, whose husband, Edgar, has come to the conclusion that a pretty face is not the sole manifestation of beauty. Thus, a man of great intellect finds that one never stops learning about human nature, while a woman who has been celebrated for her loveliness finds herself deported to a place where beauty is relative, an ugly, intolerant little corner of the Twilight Zone.
There Goes the Neighborhood, starring Tim Kazurinsky with Stacy Keach as your narrator, was written for The Twilight Zone by Barry Rickert. Heard in the cast were Meg Thalkin and Roger Mueller. The producers of The Twilight Zone wish to thank CBS Enterprises and the Rod Serling Estate for making this series possible. This copyrighted radio series is produced and directed by Carl Amari for Falcon Picture Group and Westwood One. Custom Foley effects, sound design, and mixing are done in the Cerny American Sound-to-Picture Theater by Cerny American creatives Bob Benson, Craig Lee, Todd Beyer, and Tim Cerny. To learn more about the Twilight Zone radio dramas and to contact us, visit our official website at twilightzoneradio.com. Doug James speaking.
Well, Barry, fantastic work there, my friend.
Thank
Great
you.
Writing on that. Terrific story, an original story. As I said earlier, most of these Twilight Zone radio dramas that we did from 2002 all the way to about 2010 did 185 episodes. They're all available, by the way, for digital download at twilightzoneradio.com. But all of these shows were from the original, I should say 155 of them, were the original stories that you see, the Rod Serling stories, but then we did 30 brand new stories. We just played one And Barry wrote some of those, and just a great job, Barry. Terrific.
Thank you
very much.
And great stuff from the other writers as well.
Oh, yeah.
The original stories.
Just terrific. And in our next segment, we're going to listen to another New Time radio drama called Fangoria's Dread Time Stories. The host is Malcolm McDowell. That's coming your way. So stick around here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. We're here every Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning, Monday morning, every single week. Make sure you mark your calendar, tell a friend. And if you are joining us for the first time and you're wondering what the heck is happening over at the legendary 720 WGN, we're playing classic radio shows normally. Tonight, or this morning, we're playing New Time radio shows. The magic of radio drama should never go away, from the classics to New Time. And there's a lot of producers doing New Time radio, including myself. And I hire the best writers in the business, and one of them is sitting across the council from me. No, not you, Lisa, although you are a good writer, too.
Thanks, girl.
You're a darn good actress. In fact, you're in this next story.
I'm
picked
looking
one
forward
with you
to hearing
in it.
It.
But I'm talking about Barry Rickard,
I know.
Who has written several of these stories for me. Barry, great episode of Twilight Zone radio dramas. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Terrific
on
job.
TV, you could see me blushing.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Well, this next series, this next story we're going to hear is called The Dark Enforcer, and it aired on the Fangoria's Dread Time Stories series. So let me tell you how that all kind of came about. I'm a big fan of Fangoria, the magazine and the website. It's like the destination for horror, and I'm a big horror fan. And Fangoria has been around for years and years and years. And the owner of Fangoria, Tom DeFeo, contacted me after hearing some Twilight Zone radio dramas and said, hey, why don't we do a horror series branded by Fangoria, and we'll air them on our website. We can air them on radio and things like that. And they did. They aired on SiriusXM radio, and they aired on the BBC. And we only did 17 of these. I wanted to do more, but then I started doing Hollywood, a show out of Hollywood, and then I also started doing some movie stuff, and I couldn't continue to do it. So there's only 17 episodes. I think you wrote a couple of them, right, Barry?
I did, yeah. Two or three, I think.
Yeah, and great work. And this is one of my favorite ones in the whole series because it's sort of dark humor. It's really not a horror so much. It's more kind of dark humor, tongue-in-cheek. And the host of this series is the fantastic actor Malcolm McDowell. In this cast, a terrific Chicago cast, T.J. Jagodowski, you see him on the Sonic commercials. He's sitting in the car with another gentleman, so he's the blonde-haired guy. And there's a brunette guy. I don't know his name, but T.J.
As I call him, he's the goofy guy, yeah, on the left of the two goofy guys.
Exactly. Rich Kominek is in this. Kurt Nabig, who's in a million different things. Jim McCants. I'm in this episode. I play Marty. I'm one of the comic book geeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gary Tiedemann. Jeff Morrow plays the Dark Enforcer. And Lisa Wolf plays Gwendolyn in this. And Patrick Cerny plays Phil. So this is called The Dark Enforcer. We recorded this in May of 2012, so just a few years ago. New Time radio drama by Barry Rickard called The Dark Enforcer. Here's part one of Fangoria's Dread Time Stories.
You can run, but you can't hide. It's far too late for that. Welcome to the dark side, where the night never ends. As Fangoria presents Dread Time Stories with your host, Malcolm McDowell.
There, my satanic friend. Behind that door, my fiancée, Gwendolyn, lies with that scoundrel, Rodrigo. Let us pay them an unexpected visit. Break down the door.
Beauregard! What is this beast you bring into my house?
This beast is your fate, you blackguard.
No, Beauregard!
Yes, Gwendolyn. I promise you, this will be the last time your loins stir with the flesh of this treacherous rogue. Go, my demonic servant. Kill him.
No! No, I admit! I have done wrong! Beauregard! I shall make it up to you!
Too late for reparations, Rodrigo. You thought me a spineless worm, but you were mistaken. Yes! Yes, that's it! Tear him apart! Let him feel the justice of your wrath! And now, kill the woman.
No! Beauregard! I beg of you!
Beseech all you wish, harlot! Your end is at hand.
No!
That's it! That's it! Slake my thirst for vengeance! Vindicate me, my pet! My minion! My dark enforcer!
Its name is the Dark Enforcer. It was spawned in the deepest fathoms of hell. The evil desires match those of its master, and it exists in a place frequented by only the most adventurous souls, between the pages of a comic book. It debuted in 1964 in issue number 7 of Gruesome Tales, an anthology comic book that had, as the cover proudly boasted, more scares than you could stuff into a coffin. Not long after, the Dark Enforcer earned his own monthly comic book. Although the title ceased publication in the late 70s, it remains a literary masterpiece that continues to generate much controversy.
I know this is your all-time favorite comic and all, Dave, but it's a bit antiquated, isn't it?
Not at all. In fact, The Dark Enforcer transcends its time. It's as fresh now as when it was first written.
I don't know, man. I'm just not into the whole gothic style of writing. I mean, check out this dialogue. Slake my thirst for vengeance. Seriously, dude, when's the last time anybody slaked anything?
But you have to consider the dialogue in context. See, it's a gothic setting.
As this debate rages, the parties on both sides of the argument would agree that there is one good thing about the demonic behemoth that populates the pages of the Dark Enforcer. It does not exist in the real world, but perhaps with just the right amount of motivation, that could change. It is a verifiable truth on the north side of Chicago that only the coolest of the comic book geeks hang out at Dave's Dungeon of Comics. The proprietor, Dave Chersky, is a quiet fellow who rarely seeks any kind of attention. He comes out of his shell, however, when the subject of comic books is raised. All the true comic book fans know that the new comics deliver on Wednesday. And so, that is the day when the experts, the authorities, and the connoisseurs assemble at the dungeon to pick up the latest issues of their favorite titles and discuss the most pressing topics of the day.
Phil, think about what you're saying. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no way that Swamp Thing could ever beat the Incredible Hulk.
But Marty, physical attacks can't hurt Swamp Thing. He can grow back severed body parts. It makes him impervious to harm.
Yeah, but the Hulk is propelled by anger. The madder he gets, the more he could tear that puny weed-infested wimp apart.
Puny?
The Dark Enforcer could take them both.
Oh, cripes, here we go again.
Seriously, if you're looking for the ultimate power in the universe...
In the Gruesome Tales universe, he couldn't touch anyone in the Marvel or DC realm.
Oh, I don't know about that. He only follows his master's wishes, so he's not suppressed by morals or a sense of right and wrong.
Yeah, I never met a creature from hell who was.
But he's pure evil. He has only one goal, to kill.
Great, another Dark Enforcer extremist.
And proud of it. I have some issues completely memorized.
Look, Dan, since you've only been coming into the dungeon for a couple of weeks, we're going to cut you some slack. But you're just not going to convince us that the Dark Enforcer could take the Hulk.
Or Swamp Thing.
Hey, I love Swamp Thing, but but the Dark Enforcer is the champion of underdogs.
That's right. He can only serve those who have been treated unfairly by others.
But he can also only serve one master at a time, right? So really, he's the champion of one underdog, depending on when you catch him.
True, but he has defended many underdogs over time, so the title is still valid.
Dan, you may be new around here, but your taste in comics is impeccable. Listen, guys, I hate to break up the party, but it's already after 7.
Ah, you just want to stop the discussion while you think you've got the upper hand.
What's with the 7 o'clock closing time on Wednesdays, Dave? Most comic shops stay open late on delivery day.
Well, you guys are all my regulars, and you've already bought your comics, right? So I've made my profit for the day.
Fine. Come on, Marty. Let's leave Scrooge McDuck to swim around in his money bin.
I wish. Some titles didn't deliver this week. I may not even break even.
Looked to me like there was plenty of green passing over the counter tonight. I'm sure the bank isn't after you.
No, not the bank.
I'm out of here. Come on, Phil.
See you guys next week.
See ya.
All right, see ya.
Whoa, tough crowd.
Yeah, they're good guys, just very passionate about their comics.
I could see that. Hey, listen, I know it's not the Dark Enforcer, but they're showing that old Swamp Thing movie over at that Revival Theater on Milwaukee Avenue. I was thinking of seeing if Phil wants to go since he's such a diehard fan. You interested?
No, I don't think so. I gotta, do some inventory and stuff. You know how it is, delivery day and all.
Yeah, sure. The big businessman. Well, hey, man, don't work too late, Mr. Trump.
All right. Yeah, see ya.
Now, running a business, even a small one, often means sacrificing activities like a night out. But Dave has something on his mind besides inventory, something he's forced to deal with every Wednesday, something he dreads. A visitor who comes to the shop each week, but not to buy comic books.
Chersky.
You cut it a little close this time, Keller.
Don't worry. Your little friends are gone.
I just don't want them to know I'm paying protection money.
Why not? Almost every business on the block is doing it.
I don't allow smoking in here.
How come?
My inventory. It's all paper. Some of it old, brittle, very valuable paper. One burning ember and the whole place could go up in smoke.
Yeah, that would suck, wouldn't it? Then you and all your geeky little buddies wouldn't be able to meet here once a week and talk about your favorite superheroes and have your little circle jerk. I don't get it. Why don't you get out of this dungeon and go live your life?
There's nothing wrong with my life. I own a business. I do something I enjoy. I should be able to live my life the way I want.
You know what I think? I think you were one of those guys who was always bullied in school. And you just took the abuse, never fought back, and fantasized about beating up all the bullies.
You don't know anything about me.
I think I do. And what's more, I'll gaze into my crystal ball for you. Your life is always going to be the same. Always getting bullied by guys like me and always putting up with it until you can escape into the next comic book. Doesn't sound like much of a life to me. But hey, I don't have time to go all Dr. Phil on you. Why don't you just give me what I came here for and I'll get out of your hair?
That might be a problem. I didn't make enough money to give you anything this week. A lot of the titles I ordered didn't deliver, but that means more titles than usual will deliver next week, so I could give you enough for 2 weeks all at once. There'd only be a 1 week delay.
See, now, in order for us to give you the kind of protection you're paying us for, we have to get paid on a weekly basis. Without fail. That's our agreement. This is a dangerous neighborhood, Dave. Without that payment, there's no telling what could happen to you.
You don't need to lock the door.
But see, I do, Dave. Under these circumstances, there's a protocol we have to follow. It starts with me doing something like this.
It's all my new inventory. Don't!
Don't what? You mean this?
Please! stop! Those are valuable back issues!
You want me to stop? Okay, I'll stop. But see, the problem with that is, then we gotta get to the ugly stuff.
No, please, put the gun away. You don't need to do that.
Don't worry, I'm not gonna shoot you. I'm just gonna do this! And this!
Kella strikes Dave repeatedly with the butt of his gun. Curled up in a fetus-like position, Dave does what he can to protect himself, but Kella gets in several well-placed blows to the head. Finally, weary with the effort, Kella stops.
You have one day. You hear me? You hear me?
Yes.
I don't care how you get it. You can sell your own grandmother for all I care. Just have the money tomorrow, or it'll be worse for you. Understand?
Yes.
You know what disappoints me about you, Chersky? It's not that you didn't have the money. It's that you didn't fight back. I mean, you just kind of laid there. You really should clean this place up. I don't know how you expect to run a business when you keep it so messy.
Dave lays on the floor, sobbing partly out of humiliation, partly out of anger, and even partly out of relief that Kella is gone. But as he reflects on the events that led to this confrontation, Dave has an epiphany. Kella is right. He has always let himself be bullied. As he picks himself up off the floor, Dave's tears are mingled with a resolve that he will never be treated like that again. And in that revelatory moment, Dave begins to formulate a plan that will forever change his life.
All right, that is the first portion.
We'll return to Fangoria's Dreadtime stories after these words.
Sorry about that, Jim McCants.
I didn't write that part.
I talked over that. Sorry, didn't mean to do that. Jim McCants is the announcer on that. You hear the great Malcolm McDowell as the host of Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories. What a blast it was to work with Malcolm McDowell. He's just so much fun to work with on this series. And all the great actors that we had on this. Of course, this particular episode, we had we brought in a big star, Lisa Wolf, for this to play that role of Gwendolyn.
Unmistakable.
Yeah, and she it was a perfect casting because she gets killed in about the first 30 seconds
she
of
does.
The show.
Wasn't
yeah.
that perfect?
I wrote it for
me?
Her.
Thank
yeah,
you.
I wrote it for her.
Yeah, and that
let's
was
get
it.
Her in and let's get her out.
It was just right. It was just just long enough.
Thanks,
you get a little you get to enjoy her for a little while.
I'm catching
then,
on what goes on
she's,
here.
She's yeah. out of there. T.J. Jagodowski does an amazing job in this. Rich Komenek is the bad guy. He's terrific. And just I hope you enjoy this. We'll get back to The Dark Enforcer, written by Barry Rickard, in just a few minutes. Let's pay some bills. We'll come back and chat with Barry a little while longer, and then we'll return to Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories. Before we go to the news, I'll chat with Barry Rickard a little bit more. He wrote both of these stories we're listening to here on the WGN Radio Theater. Barry, you do some freelance work too, right? You are available. You can be hired. Is this true?
I can indeed, yeah.
All right. So how do people contact you? If they want something, you're a professional writer. You can do radio commercials, TV commercials, or dramatic stories like what we're hearing, all kinds of stuff, pretty much anything, right?
Yeah, particularly in the areas of script writing, and I've done some marketing writing.
All right, so there's two ways they can reach you. They can go to your Facebook page. So just go to Facebook and just search for Barry Rickard, R-I-C-H-E-R-T, Barry Rickard, and you'll find his Facebook page. Or you can just email him directly at B-A Rickard, so B-A-R-I-C-H-E-R-T, B-A-R-I-C-H-E-R-T at MSN.com, correct?
That's it.
You don't want to give your Social Security card number out or your phone number or any of that kind of good stuff? Probably not, right?
I do not.
No, me neither.
I know it's late, but, you know.
Yeah, no. There's lots and lots and lots of listeners out there. Hopefully you'll get some calls because he's one of the best I've ever used to write my stories, Barry. I mean, that's why you're here tonight. Because I wanted to play these are two of my favorite stories that we ever did.
Well, you're very kind, thank you. And my head will not fit through that door when I leave.
All right, so world record. Lisa is awake in our third hour. World record. This is like the 12th time in a row, I think, that you are not in a fetal position in the corner there sleeping.
It's the 33rd time in a row, because isn't this our 33rd
show?
No,
this is our 32nd show.
Oh, well, it's almost 33. And by the 33rd, I'll still be awake.
Really?
So it's the same
thing. You're not going to go to sleep from now till then?
No, I'm going to stay up all week and wait for our 33rd show.
All right. Sounds good. So welcome back to the show, everybody. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm Carl Amari, Lisa Wolf here across the council from me. Dan Long, the best in the business, our producer in there. Dan, say hello to everybody.
Hello to everybody.
All right. Dan is
a man of few words.
I tell you
today.
What, this man works really hard. He puts the podcast up. He stays here to like all hours of the night, and he gets the podcast up for everybody. He does the post things to the WGN Facebook page. He produces this show. He is. We really.
Well, he produces more than just ours.
Oh, I know.
Can
but you know what? What other shows do you produce here on WGN?
Should we throw out a couple plugs?
Yeah, let's do that.
Obviously the WGN Radio Theater right here. After Hours with Rick Hogan, which is 9 to 11, right before us, typically.
Yeah.
When there's not Blackhawks hockey,
right.
I will produce Blackhawks hockey a few games here and there. Saturday nights, 9 to 11, the Nocturnal Journal with Dave Hoekstra. And picking up some steam on our digital platform, WGNplus.com, is Studio B, my own little pet project.
Oh, wow.
If I could just give myself a little plug there, I will absolutely do that.
What happens on that show? I want to hear it. What is it about?
Right now it's interview-based, and I pretty much just kind of cover things in, you know, around here in Chicago and entertainment and culture that I think have either slipped through the cracks, or I'm just going to talk to people and give kind of a different – obviously, I'm not – a professional-sounding broadcaster, so it's a relaxed kind of conversation with people.
Well,
either
is Lisa and I, so I mean, it's just...
Hey, speak for yourself over there. Dan, I bet you do great interviews.
Yeah. Wow, very cool.
And Carl and I and Barry are available.
How can I listen to it? It's on the WGN Pod?
Plus.
Yeah. So WGNplus.com and just click on the Studio B tab. I think it's under entertainment.
Wow, very cool.
See, we learned something new tonight.
Congratulations. And you know what? I'm right. He's the hardest working man in show business over here.
That's for sure.
And he puts this show on the air, and you do a fabulous job. And we want you to know how much we appreciate you, Dan. We really, really do.
I appreciate hearing that.
All right, man. I really, really do. Okay, so in this hour, we are going to tune into two more portions of this story on Fangoria's Dread Times Stories. It is called The Dark Enforcer, written by the man who is in the studio with us, Barry Rickert. But first, it's time for our sponsor segment. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
The Hateful Eight is an upcoming Western film. Carl, you like Westerns.
Yes.
Written and directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Right.
And it stars this actor as a bounty hunter known for hanging the fugitives he captures.
Right. Now, there's a lot of actors in it, and this is one of the actors in the film. Now, this actor that Lisa's talking about originally starred in a 1993 Western action drama, another Western, called Tombstone. Take a listen.
I said, throw down, boy.
All right, if you know who that celebrity is, give us a call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Win a $25 gift card for Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria, and we'll find our winner after this short break.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we want to name that celebrity. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I said, throw down, boy.
Ooh, Howard from Aurora, how are you?
Oh, I hope you guys are doing good.
Oh, good. Well, we hope you're doing good, too.
Well, I'm listening to you, so you can't beat that.
There you go. We agree with you. Well, who's that celebrity?
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell. And he will be starring in this new The Hateful Eight. It's an exciting film coming up. And you are a winner, Howard. You have won a $25 gift certificate for the Warehouse Bar and Pizzeria. It is delicious. I can tell you that firsthand. They just opened recently in Chicago's Lincoln Park neighborhood. And they have 15 large screen TVs and some specialty pizzas and a really impressive bar selection. So I hope that you will appreciate that.
Well, as well as you guys.
Excellent. Thank you. And you can check them out at thewarehousechicago.com.
Thanks a lot, Howard,
for calling.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Sure, thanks
for listening. You're very welcome. Thank you, Howard. So this is WGN Radio Theater, Lisa. That's what we do here every Sunday night till 2 a.m. Monday morning. We play classic radio shows, although we have tweaked it a little bit on this edition by playing some new time radio dramas. Two of the series that I produced were offering on this edition. We tuned into the Twilight Zone radio dramas, and we are in the midst of listening to Fangoria's Dread Time Stories. And this is called The Dark Enforcer, written by Barry Rickard. And Barry is in the studio with us. Barry, how did you come up with the idea for this particular story, The Dark Enforcer?
Well, this was kind of my homage to those old black and white comics that used to come out in the 60s.
Sure,
like
sure.
Creepy and eerie and all the ones your mother didn't want you to read.
Right.
I thought it would be kind of fun to set it in a comic book shop. And those were the first comics I read where you didn't have a hero that you were necessarily going to root for. In fact, it probably wasn't a hero. It was usually some guy who wanted to off his wife because she was nagging him, or some guy who was trying to get rich. And I thought it would be kind of fun to set him up as someone that you liked and then kind of see how he declines as he kind of gains some power and how he abuses that. It's kind of a theme I like to put into a lot of my scripts. And this was the result.
Well, what does your wife think of these stories?
She gets a little scared. She gets a little scared when she hears the the wives being sent to other dimensions.
If she's listening, let's give her a little shout out because she puts up with your little crazy writing, of these crazy stories.
She does. My wife Linda is very tolerant. Living with a man who writes horror can be a challenge, but
Hello,
it can be
Linda.
A horror, frankly. But she's stuck with me.
Well, I'd like to thank her for allowing you to write these in your time together. You got to take time away from her to write these stories.
Indeed.
So thank you, Linda. Great job. All right, we're going to get back to this now. This is part two of three parts of The Dark Enforcer, written by Barry Rickard. Here is part two of the Fangoria's Dread Time Stories.
Now, back to Fangoria's Dread Time Stories and The Dark Enforcer.
She'll be happy.
The next morning, Dave arrives at the shop a little early to clean up. He then has a normal day dealing with customers. A day in which he tries to act like someone who wasn't beaten within an inch of his life the night before. A day in which he plans to do something about the Leon Kellers of the world.
Hi, Dave.
Oh, how are you, Dan?
Pretty good. Thought I'd pick up some Swamp Thing back issues. Phil and I went to see that movie last night. I decided to bone up on some of the backstory. Oh, man, too bad you couldn't come.
Believe me, I would have rather been there than here.
I can see that. Where'd you get that black eye?
What? Oh, some comics fell on me in the back room from the upper shelf.
No kidding. Who'd have thought owning a comic book shop could be so hazardous?
Yeah, right.
Well, man, you missed a good time. Rarely has there been a more charming and voluptuous scream queen than Adrienne Barbeau.
I can't argue with that.
Plus, there's something just appealing about the thought of having an enormous guardian like the Swamp Thing. It'd make you feel so powerful, you know?
Yes, I do know. That's $6 even for the comics.
Okay. Oh, I'm a dollar short.
Don't worry. Just make up for it next time.
You sure?
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm still looking for full-time work. Been freelancing a lot.
Yeah, times are tough. Believe me, I know.
I guess. I just hate to keep mooching off my dad. He's letting me stay with him rent-free.
How's his new job going?
It's good, good. Working for the city of Chicago is a lot different than the little Bergen, Michigan we came from. But, you know, he seems to have adapted.
That's good.
So, doing a little reading.
What?
That issue of The Dark Enforcer you've got open there, revisiting the classics?
Oh, yeah.
If my eyes don't deceive me, that's issue number 17, Terror in the Night. That's the issue with the full invocation to summon the Dark Enforcer from the depths of Hades. Ah. Oh. A true classic. I got it memorized cover to cover.
Yeah, well, you know how it is when you own a comic book shop. You got to stay exposed to great literature.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll let you close up shop here. Good talking to you, man.
Yeah, same here. Take care.
Dave spends the next several minutes closing up the shop. He then intently studies the Dark Enforcer comic book Dan pointed out, concentrating on its pages like a student cramming for an exam. Shortly after closing time, the moment Dave has been anticipating arrives.
Chersky.
I told you last night, there's no smoking in here.
So you did. That's quite a shiny you got there. What happened? Disagree with a customer about the color of Wonder Woman's cape? Nothing, huh? Frankly, I'm amazed to see you've got enough backbone to even stand up today. But enough of this convivial banter. You got the money?
No.
Maybe I kicked you a little too hard in the head last night because I don't think you're grasping the seriousness of the situation.
There's no way I could get my hands on that much money in 24 hours, so I don't have it. And what's more, I never will. I'm tired of being pushed around by guys like you. Now get out of my shop.
Whoa, what happened to you, Chersky? Sometime in the last 24 hours, you grew a pair. Too bad you chose today to do it. This time I'm afraid I'm going to have to use the business end of this thing.
If you shoot, anyone could hear.
What's the matter? Don't you ever go to the movies? This little mechanism on the barrel is called a silencer. Nobody's going to hear a thing. Besides, it's not like I'm going to kill you. I'm just going to fire off a couple warning shots. Maybe to your kneecaps. Maybe to your elbows. Or maybe I'll mix and match.
Put the gun down. I'm warning you.
To Keller's amazement, Dave suddenly holds up his Dark Enforcer comic book and strikes a pose that mimics the body language of the character in its pages. Then he reads the incantation.
Defender of the persecuted, I summon thee. Arise from the underworld.
I think I did kick you too hard in the head.
Why is nothing happening? Maybe I need to say it louder. Defender of the persecuted, I summon thee. Arise from the underworld. Hello? Calling all demons. Nothing.
Chersky, I don't know what's wrong with you, but for the record, most people like to go out with a little more dignity.
I should have known it wouldn't work. What was I thinking?
I thought I explained all that last night. All your comic book fantasies ain't gonna cut it here in the real world. Now stand still so I can do my job.
Wait! What's that?
It appears at first as if a hole has formed in the floor. But the closer he looks at it, Dave realizes it isn't a hole. It's nothing. A void. An inky vacuum that fills Dave with a dread like he's never felt before. Suddenly, flames arise from the void. And a hulking figure begins to take shape.
What the?
The behemoth that stands before them is monstrous. So huge, it blocks out what little light there is in the store. In fact, Dave could swear that the beast seems to somehow suffocate, even consume. The light.
I can't believe it. I actually summoned the Dark Enforcer.
While a slack-jawed Leon Keller looks on, his gun still pointed at Dave, the Dark Enforcer stands in the middle of Dave's dungeon of comics, doing nothing.
Servant, defend me! Why aren't you moving? Oh, wait, there's some kind of protocol I'm supposed to follow. Here it is. Welcome, demon, to the upper world.
I have heeded thy call.
No kidding. I mean, to whom do you pledge your allegiance?
Art thou the maltreated, the subjugated, the oppressed, the underdog?
I am.
Then I pledge my allegiance to thee, Master.
Sweet.
Show me thine enemy, and I shall defend thee.
That guy right there.
Screw this! That gorilla is toast!
Keller's bullets go through the beast, but then disappear as if he'd been shooting into a black hole.
For the first time since Dave met Keller, he sees a look of fear pass across the gunman's features as the monstrous Helion knocks the pistol out of his hand.
Hey, my gun!
Shall I eliminate your enemy?
Yes! Eliminate him!
Hey, now wait a minute. Let's talk this over. Maybe we can work out some kind of payment plan.
That's not what you said last night.
Like an enraged child taking his anger out on a rag doll, the beast grabs Keller by the legs and jerks his feet out from under him, leaving him dangling upside down.
Put me down!
Come on, Keller!
It was nothing personal, right?
So beating me almost to death was a business decision?
Yes! It's part of my job! My boss expects me to do it! I just did it for show! I'm on your side, Chersky! I always was! I gave you an extra day to get the money, didn't I?
Save it, Keller. You always treated me like I was a spineless worm. You enjoyed beating the crap out of me, and you know it.
Listen, if you get King Kong to put me down, I'll make it up to you. There must be something I can do for you.
There's only one thing I want you to do. Make a wish.
At Dave's command, the Dark Enforcer grabs one of Keller's legs in each of its massive hands and rips him straight down the middle. As he gazes at what's left of Keller, Dave feels a surge of exhilaration go through him. Intoxicated by the power he now wields, Dave turns to the unearthly creature that stands beside him.
You know something, my gigantic friend? Keller was right about one thing. I have always been harassed by guys like him, and I have always put up with the bullying. But now the bullying is going to stop.
Yes, Master.
Nice! Funny how that doesn't sound so cliche when you're the one being addressed. Dispose of his body. Both halves. I need to clean up the shop. Then you and I have some work to do.
That night, and for several nights thereafter, Dave and the Dark Enforcer visit some of Dave's old high school classmates. This is not, however, a series of joyful reunions. Rather, it is a carefully planned agenda designed to eradicate anyone who ever bullied Dave.
Who is it?
Doug Rockabrand?
Yes?
It's me, Dave Chersky.
Chersky? Chersky? Why do I know that name?
We went to high school together.
Chersky, it is you. I almost didn't recognize you without all that acne. What brings you here? We didn't exactly hang around in the same social circles.
No, we didn't, did we? In fact, you and your buddies used to go to great lengths to make that clear to me. The wedgies, the swirlies. And how about the times you guys pantsed me at that pep rally? I think everyone in the school saw me naked from the waist down. Good times, huh?
Yeah. You know, that was a long time ago.
You think so? It seems like yesterday to me. But then I guess once you've been humiliated like that, it's kind of hard to let go.
Listen, I gotta get ready for work. It was great seeing you.
Oh, hang on. I didn't get to introduce you to my friend.
That's okay. Gotta run.
But he really wants to meet you. Wait, where is he? He can be a little shy. Hey, buddy, come over here so Dougie can meet you.
What the hell?
Can we come in?
No!
You know, big guy, his mouth said no, but his eyes said yes. Break down the door.
And so it goes, as each night, Dave and the Dark Enforcer visit all of his old school tormentors. Then each morning, he returns to his day job as mild-mannered Dave Chersky, proprietor of Dave's Dungeon of Comics. Dave revels in the subterfuge, fancying himself as a sort of Clark Kent during the day and a malevolent version of Superman at night.
All right, let's take a break here from the Dark Enforcer on Fangoria's Dread Time Stories. Let's hear of a couple of commercials, and then we'll be right back. Thank you, Esmeralda Leon. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing new time radio dramas. We generally play classic radio shows. That's what we normally do. But every once in a while, we're going to explore newer radio dramas, and that's what we're doing on this edition. We're in the middle of tuning in to The Dark Enforcer by Barry Rickard on Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories. Here's part three, the conclusion now of that episode.
On this particular day, as closing time approaches and the store clears out, Dave attends to his last customer, a client who appears a bit older than the usual crowd.
Dave Chersky?
Yes?
Detective Nick Monahan, Chicago Police Department.
Oh, what can I do for you?
You mind if I ask you a few questions?
I guess not.
You've got a nice shop here.
Thanks.
My son's a big comic book fan. I enjoyed him in my younger days. Batman, mostly. Guess I grew out of them. No offense.
I was just about to close up, Detective. What is it that I can help you with?
Sorry. Don't mean to keep you. Anyone ever come in here and ask for money to protect your business?
No.
Really? That surprises me. Just about every store up and down this block is paying protection.
This is a pretty small shop. Probably figured I wasn't worth the bother.
Could be. They usually hit everybody on a single block, though. See, a few nights ago, the mob enforcer who works this neighborhood went missing.
And you're worried about him?
I'm worried about what it could mean. Here's a picture of him. It's from a security camera. Not too clear. His name's Leon Keller. Medium build, dark brown hair, brown eyes. You'd remember him. He's an arrogant bastard.
Yeah, I've never seen him. I mean, my hours aren't as long as the other businesses. Maybe I'm just flying under his radar.
Maybe. Say, I hope you don't mind my asking. Where'd you get that black eye? Looks like someone got their licks in.
Oh, I was doing inventory in the back, and a stack of comics fell off the top shelf.
Comic books are that heavy, huh?
A stack of them, yeah.
I guess.
Was there anything else, Detective?
Now that you mention it, yeah, just one more thing. The woman who runs the cleaners next door said she heard a lot of noise coming from over here last Wednesday.
Noise?
Yeah. You know what that might have been?
Probably just all the customers in here. It gets pretty loud on delivery day.
No, she said it sounded like someone was tearing up the joint. After hours. Lots of yelling, stuff being thrown around. After about 5 minutes, it got quiet. She peeked out her front door to see what was going on, and she saw someone leaving.
Oh?
Yeah. Someone who perfectly fits the description of Leon Keller.
She was mistaken. He must have been coming from up the street.
She specifically witnessed him walking out of this store. Is it possible you made a mistake, Mr. Chersky? That you do know Leon Keller?
No, of course not.
So, I'm afraid you've become a person of interest. I'd appreciate it if you'd come down to the station house with me.
No. Hey, this is harassment. I didn't do anything.
Then you have nothing to worry about. But the thing is, Mr. Chersky, we know how Keller operated. I figure all the noise was him roughing you up because you couldn't pay him his protection money. He probably gave you a day to come up with the cash. You couldn't do it. And knowing he was going to beat you again, or worse, you killed him when he came back. Is that what happened, Mr. Chersky?
No. You don't know what you're talking about. You're just another bully pushing me around.
That's why you got that black eye. It wasn't from comic books falling on you. It was from a scuffle with Keller. What the hell is that noise?
You can't accuse me of killing Keller, or anyone else. I didn't do it.
My master is in distress. You must pay.
Put me down!
Wait, what are you doing? Detective, I didn't tell him to do this, I swear.
I must avenge my master.
No, stop!
To Dave's surprise, the Dark Enforcer proceeds to tear the detective apart. When he's finished, he tosses the remains on the floor at Dave's feet.
Why did you do that?
Thou art the maltreated, the subjugated, the oppressed.
Yeah. I'm the underdog. I get that.
I must kill all enemies of the underdog.
But you must wait for my command.
I need not wait once I know who your enemies are. It is the bidding of Balthazar.
Balthazar? Oh, my God. Balthazar became the second Dark Lord of the Underworld in issue number 47. He gave you the ability to identify enemies of your master and kill them at your own will. It's like you're learning, becoming more intuitive as time goes on, just like in the comic. This has gotten out of control. We need to take care of this mess. You get rid of the body. I'll clean up. Oh, I hope I have enough bleach left. Then we have to figure out our next move.
Having disposed of Detective Monaghan's body, the Dark Enforcer has returned to whatever demonic lair he calls home. Dave now sits on a chair in the back room, his head in his hands, the very picture of dejection.
I can't do this anymore. Things have gotten out of control. I never should have summoned the Dark Enforcer, should never have had him murder all those people. Now he can destroy whoever he thinks is my enemy without my command. Anyone who so much as frowns at me could get killed. I have to figure out a way to stop it. There's only one thing I can do. Find the issue of the Dark Enforcer that tells how to reverse the summoning command.
Dave spends an hour searching through his archive of back issues, but comes up empty.
I'd have sworn up and down I had a copy here, but I guess not. I know I have it at home. I'll have to go home and get it.
Dave?
Dan.
Yeah, sorry to bother you. I know you're closed now.
No, it's fine. Come on in.
What's up? You look like you had a rough day.
You have no idea. You ever feel like the whole world is collapsing all around you?
Funny you should mention that. I had a job interview this afternoon. I just stopped by to tell you how badly it went.
I wish my problems were that simple. I'm thinking about closing up the shop and leaving town.
Really? Things can't be that bad.
Trust me, they are.
My shoulder's pretty good for crying on, if you're comfortable doing that. You know, in a manly way.
Right. Well, maybe you would understand. You're a fellow Dark Enforcer fan, after all. I've been keeping this to myself for so long, a little confession might be good for the soul. Although I think mine may be beyond redemption. Ah, hell. I'm in trouble anyway. I guess at this point I've got nothing to lose.
Sounds serious. What is it?
Well, it started a week ago. This guy came into the shop after closing time. See, I've been paying him.
And so, as the morning light spills into the unlikely confessional, Dave spills his guts. While relating the gruesome story, Dave questions whether he's doing the right thing. He even thinks about stopping once or twice, but once the words start to tumble out, he realizes it feels good to unload, especially with Dan. He's an ally, comrade, a kindred spirit, willing to sit and listen to his horrific story. Dan reacts with the appropriate amount of shock at all the right moments. But as Dave gets to the end of his story, concluding with the killing of Detective Monaghan that morning, Dan gets very quiet.
I don't think there's anyone left who has ever bullied me or pushed me around. The bad news is the police are on me. Plus, I think I've sacrificed my soul somewhere along the way.
That's quite a story.
Yeah. So now you see my dilemma. I don't want the Dark Enforcer to kill anyone else. I was in back trying to find the issue where Roderick the Enchanter reversed the summoning command. I don't suppose you remember it.
I'll do you one better.
Really? How?
As if in a trance, Dan suddenly stands up, moves to the center of the store, and raises his arms dramatically.
Defender of the persecuted, I summon thee! Arise from the underworld.
What are you doing?
I've never told you my full name, have I?
No, now that I think of it, I guess not. But what does that matter right now?
Because I think you'll find it rings a bell. My name is Monahan. Daniel Monahan.
Monahan? Oh, my God.
My father was Detective Nick Monahan of the Chicago Police Department.
Dan, I had no idea.
Welcome, demon, to the upper world.
I have heeded thy call.
Wait a minute. You're supposed to answer to me.
To whom do you pledge your allegiance?
Art thou the maltreated, the subjugated, the oppressed, the underdog?
I am.
Then I pledge my allegiance to thee, master.
But I'm your master.
Not anymore. You said it yourself. Everyone who has ever bullied you or pushed you around has been killed. And if there's no one left who thinks they're better than you, you can't be the underdog anymore now, can you?
Show me thine enemies, and I shall defend thee.
Him. That guy right there. Dave Chersky.
Wait. Let's think about this logically. I didn't kill your father. The Dark Enforcer did.
Ah, come on, Dave. We both know how it works in the comic. The Dark Enforcer can only follow the orders of his master.
But I didn't order him to kill your dad. He invoked the bidding of Balthazar.
Doesn't matter. You still wanted my dad dead, didn't you? Otherwise, the Dark Enforcer wouldn't have killed him. Am I right? Am I?
Yes.
Then we're done talking.
Shall I eliminate your enemy?
Do it.
Please. No. If I had known it would come to this, I wouldn't have summoned him in the first place. I just wanted to get back at Keller, at everyone who'd ever bullied me. I just wanted revenge.
Yeah. Payback's a bitch.
No! No! Please, no.
The Dark Enforcer was written for radio by Barry Rickert. Heard in the cast were T.J. Jagodowski, Rich Kominick, Kurt Nabig, Lisa Wolf, Jim McCants, Carl Amari, Gary Tiedemann, Patrick Cerny, and Jeff Morrow as the Dark Enforcer. Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories with host Malcolm McDowell is a copyrighted radio feature produced and directed by Carl Amari. Executive producer Thomas DeFeo. Associate producer Chris Rowe. Sound design, custom Foley effects, recording, and editing are produced in the Cerny American Sound to Picture Theater by sound designers Craig Lee, Bob Benson, and Tim Cerny. Original music composed and conducted by Chris Alexander. Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories are available for digital audio download at fangoria.com, where you can also print a free PDF copy of the radio scripts. Join us next time on the Dark Side, where the night never ends, for another fascinating story presented by Fangoria Magazine. Jim McCants speaking.
There is Fangoria's Dreadtime Stories, The Dark Enforcer by Barry Rickert. And we recorded that in May of 2012, Barry. I remember having a good time doing that with all
the
cast.
That was a real good time, yeah. It's a terrific cast.
And the way we do that, Malcolm McDowell would be in L.A., and we'd have all the cast here in Chicago when we were recording that, and we would do all the body of it. And then I would direct Malcolm over the phone, although I'd never really had to give him much direction. He's the best, you know, best there is out there.
It's a thrill hearing him say your words. He just wraps his tongue right around.
I mean, he's really, really, hearing it all mixed with the sound effects and all the actors, Is it what you're hearing in your head when you're writing it? I mean, that's really the question.
Yeah, pretty much. I will sometimes put a playlist together of a certain kind of music to kind of help maintain the tone of the piece. And,
speaking of music, the music in the Fangoria Dreadtime stories was all original. Chris Alexander, who lives in Canada, did all the, you know, we would send him the whole show and he would give us all the, you know, put all the music in. He'd create all the music, just a terrific composer. And on the Twilight Zones, we had all of the original music from the television show. It was a CBS stock library that CBS provided to us, and then we just pulled, you know, interstitial music out of that. And of course, the Twilight Zone theme. Although the Twilight Zone theme changed over the years, and we would kind of line them up to the story. So a lot of work goes into these. And Lisa and I talk about this when we play these the classic radio shows, and we said that they were done live, there wasn't any post-production. All of this that you're hearing is all done with post-production. So, I mean, I don't know how they did these shows live back then, the
amazing
classic radio shows.
It's just amazing when you listen to them, what they accomplished.
Yeah. So once again, I want to give out Barry's email. His email is BARICHERT@MSN.com. He is a freelance writer, a very good one. You can also search him on his Facebook. Just go to Facebook and search Barry Rickert, R-I-C-H-E-R-T. Just thanks for writing these stories. And if I do some new time radio dramas in the future, you know I'll be calling you up for sure.
I appreciate that. Appreciate your having me and letting me stay up late. I feel naughty here, being up this late on a Sunday night.
Yeah, it is. I'm usually in bed about 10 o'clock. All right, let's take a break for some commercials. We'll be right back. Next week here on the WGN Radio Theater, it's the Abbott and Costello Show. We'll have the Jack Benny program and the Great Gildersleeve. Those are all Thanksgiving shows. And then on Thanksgiving night, we'll be here at 7:30, right, to have a special WGN Radio Theater on Thursday, Thanksgiving.
We're so excited. We can't stay away from here. We're going to have an extra special edition of the WGN Radio Theater on Thanksgiving after dinner.
You've got something to do.
I said it better.
I just said that. Nick, I just said that, didn't I?
I didn't hear it.
I didn't hear it
okay.
either.
Yeah.
We don't really listen when he talks.
We're on from 7:30 to 10.
We're on from 7:30 to 10.
That's so great.
I know. We're excited. And here's what we're going to play on Thanksgiving. Fibber McGee and Molly, a Thanksgiving show starring Jim and Mary and Jordan. And we've got the Aldrich Family Thanksgiving show starring Bobby Ellis as Henry Aldrich. And Casey, crime photographer, after Turkey the Bill. So we've got the greatest stuff.
I think I know what my parents and I are going to do after
dinner. Oh, man.
You'll be digesting your food, listening to classic radio, gathering around the radio like it was the old days.
Lisa and I are going to have to, we're eating at our separate homes, and then as we're driving over here digesting the food to go on the air.
So there's going to be a couple of belches during the show.
We're going to have to bring our pumpkin pie right here to the studio.
That's so cool. I'm glad you guys are going to do that.
So, Nick, what's on the show this
morning?
We've
got movie reviews. A couple of really, actually two of the best films of the year open this weekend.
Really?
Two of the very best films of the year.
Really?
Called Spotlight, which is about these Boston journalists who broke the case of... pedophiles in the priesthood.
Yes, yes, yes.
An amazing
with a huge
movie.
Cast, including
Michael Keaton, Liev Schreiber, Stanley Tucci, Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams. It's a great film. And then the other is a one-word title, a movie called Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, looks great.
Which is written, well, the screenplay was by Nick Hornby, who wrote High Fidelity and About a Boy.
It's set like 50s, in the 50s.
Yeah,
yes.
Irish girl comes over from Ireland to Brooklyn and then is sort of torn between these two lives, one in America and one in Ireland, and Saoirse Ronan plays the main character.
Right, it looks just like one of the best performances of the year. It's like one of the old Hollywood movies.